You are listening to the Willpower Podcast. Welcome to the show. I am Will Holdren, and I talk with some of the most influential CEOs, entrepreneurial leaders, and thought leaders to try and reveal the secrets that has led to their success. I believe that with the right knowledge and mindset, you can do anything you set your mind to. So if you want to learn how to change your life for the better, if you want to learn how millionaires actually became wealthy, or if you want to develop and start your own business from the ground up with the right knowledge to help you, then you are in the right place because this is the Willpower Podcast. I cannot wait to introduce you to today's guest, but first, if you have enjoyed an episode, then please, please open up Apple Podcasts and hit that subscribe button. And if you think we deserve it, scroll to the bottom, select write a review, and leave us a 5-star rating with a review that states where you are from and one aspect of the show that you love. Once you do that, send me a screenshot and I will feature you on a future show and shout you out on my Instagram that has over 10,000 followers. Now let's get to the show with our newest guest. Nowhere that we go is a one-way street. Nothing that we love is a one-day key. And if we gon' do it, we gon' do this now. And if we say we gonna, we gon' hold this down. How's it going, guys? My name is Will Holdren. I'm the host of the Willpower Podcast. Today we have a very special guest. His name is Peter Pasternak. And Peter is a professional networker. He's a business matchmaker, and he was featured on seasons 3, 4, and 5 of A&E's Flip This House. On top of that, he's flipped thousands of houses, and he's a co-founder of Atlanta-based Foundations Investment Group. So it's an honor to have him on here. So Peter, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Will.
Awesome. It's my pleasure. So to start off, I asked all my guests kind of the same question. So what was your childhood like, and how has it affected you?
So that's a really great question. So it's affected me a lot. So a lot of times I don't talk about my childhood, but I'm going to give you a little bit. So I turned 61 2 weeks ago. So if you know me, people go, you don't look a day over 35. That's my branding. I talk, people go, oh my God, don't look a day over 35. So my mom had food poisoning and went into labor 2 months early. So they tried to stop the contractions and they didn't. So, you know, think of this, 61 years ago, a 7-month-old baby, I only weighed 2.5 pounds. They did not think I was going to make it. Wow. And so I was a very sick child. I had 9 operations by the time I was 5. And so a lot of my early childhood is going back to the hospital and going back for operations. And so one of the things that did not develop was my hearing. And so at 5, I got my hearing back. And so I was bullied, I was beaten up, I was called a deaf mute. And as a child, all I remembered was I just wanted to be like everybody else so that I could fit in and I wouldn't be made fun of. And I went to a speech therapist for many years and I learned how to speak phonetically, right? Sounding out words. I used to practice in front of the mirror. And so, you know, if you had asked me, you know, if I would have ended up on national television and speaking, I would have said you were crazy. But I learned to toughen up. I learned at an early age that I was not going to let people rent space in my head. That it didn't make a difference when people made fun of me. That I was responsible for me, and nobody could put a ceiling on me but me. And it had a profound effect. And I'm going to tell you a quick little story. So as most people know, if they don't, for 3 seasons, I was the lead character here in Atlanta on A&E's Flip This House. And I had to go to a huge recording studio to record the opening of the show. Because if I still have 10 or 15 episodes, so you can go on demand and you can see me flip this house. And so my name is Peter Pasternak. And, you know, they flew all the executives from New York. And in the recording, it was like almost like a football field. It was huge. Everybody was in this soundproof and I'm like by myself in this room. And when I got there, I started to hyperventilate. And I was very, very nervous. Wow. And I started, I was horrible. My voice was cracking. I mean, I was just really having trouble catching my breath. And my business partner at the time, Brian, who was on the show with me, he started to freak out because I'm a very, you know, very positive, very, you know, outgoing person. And like what even made it worse was we would take this take. And I didn't need anybody to tell me I was horrible. I mean, I knew. Oh, Peter, you're doing good. You're doing good. I'm like, I knew it wasn't even close to the truth. Right. So Brian then went back and he was like, oh, Peter, you're horrible. Okay. I like, okay, great. I got that. And it kind of broke, you know, where I was able to finish and I got better. But I had to think, like, what happened? And here's truly what happened. I got in there. And I kind of went back to my childhood. And I knew millions of people were going to hear me speak. And, you know, the thought of somebody hearing my voice, because even today, there are certain words I have trouble pronouncing. And for all those years, one of the reasons I was quiet was I didn't want to be made fun of how I spoke and if I had trouble pronouncing words. But later on, I realized, so am I going to, you know, just be quiet, or am I going to share all my experiences of life? If I mispronounce a word now, oh, well, I just laugh about it. But I went back to my childhood and it really brought back bad memories of how people made fun of me. And for a while, it just really kind of affected me. And it had been many years since anything like that happened. And for me, it was a teaching moment reminding me that you're never like done with some of that. You know, I'm a big believer of personal development and making the most of yourself, but we never get to the finish line. It's something you have to continue to do in order to, you know, be the person you want to be. So that was a long answer to probably about a short question, Will, but you know, my mind goes in many different places.
No, yeah, that was a great answer. I love that. And that's a very powerful story. Like you said, you had to overcome many obstacles early on in your life just to get where you are today. And, you know, it's quite a success story. So I love that. And then another thing you were talking about was, you know, the fear of judgment, how you didn't want to speak in front of that many people because you're afraid someone's going to pick on you, make fun of you. And I think a lot of people in today's world, they do struggle with that at pretty much any age, like elementary school, you know, at a new workplace. And so just from your experience, like, what would you recommend to be the number one way to kind of just get over that fear of judgment and to just go after what you want to do without hesitation, even though someone might make fun of you or not agree with what you're doing?
So, like I said, I was bullied. I was beaten up. I was made fun of. And, you know, it had an effect. And I think it's really working on yourself. And, you know, I have a saying that I use all the time that I won't let other people rent space in my head. So you have to get to the point where you're not worried what other people think, say, or do, and understand the only person you control is yourself. So I always look at it as like a challenge. And the challenge to me is if I am committed to being powerful, and powerful for me means by telling my truth, by speaking my truth, then it sets you free. I think a lot of times when you're afraid of what people might say or do, a lot of times you have these secrets that you keep and or things you don't talk about. And what you find is the more you say it, especially out loud, it takes away some of the power that other people, because you might be afraid somebody's gonna find out that you're ex. They might find out that, hey, I have trouble speaking. Or, you know, you have every person I know, it doesn't make a difference how much money you have, how successful you are, how good looking you are. Every person has some kind of insecurity or Achilles heel. And you, once you acknowledge that and you own it, it's like then somebody can't use that against you. Yeah. So it's really the understanding that the only person to me that really makes a difference in what I think is me. And so I'll attract people who think that way. And, you know, like we're friends. I think the world of you, but if you don't like me, it does not affect me because I understand that the people that share in my life get a lot because I care about people. I love people. But can I add one more little story? Like I want to tell you a little antidote that I think is kind of funny.
Of course.
So, you know, the one thing about being on national television and like Facebook is people want to reconnect. So let's see, this is probably about 12 or 13 years ago. There was a gentleman that I graduated high school with, all the way through elementary and high school, he was with me. And he friended me on Facebook and he asked if we could have a conversation. I said, sure. So I gave him my phone number and he called and he said, look, so, you know, at this time I'm maybe 50 years old, okay? Mm-hmm. And he's same age, we were in school together. And he said, you know, for almost 40 years, I've had a regret. He said that in high school, he had bullied and beaten me up. And he said that day, there were other kids that picked on him. And so to feel better about himself, he beat me up. And he said all these years, he's had a lot of guilt. So I said to him, his first name was Earl. I said, Earl, here's the truth. I don't even remember you beating me up because it was very often that I got beaten up and picked on. And so I didn't remember it. But here's what I said, Earl, so I've got one request from you. And that request is that you forgive yourself. I forgive you. I don't even remember it. And it says something to me that you want to reach out after all these years to make amends. So forgive yourself. And the other request I have is if there's anybody else that you feel like you've harmed, reach back out to them because I don't want you to feel guilt because I forgive you.
Wow.
So that was one of my stories.
Yeah, that's amazing. Forgiveness is definitely a very important part of it. So that's great. So I kind of want to jump back into your personal life for a little bit. So after high school, what was your plan of attack? Like, did you go to college or did you jump right into the real estate world right out of high school?
So real estate came way later. So I went to the University of Georgia, go Dogs. And you're going to find out stuff I guess you don't even know about me. So I have an undergrad and master's degree in accounting. Okay. So as a little kid, my dream was to be a CPA and to be a partner at Price Waterhouse. So I had good grades. I had a master's. I started my work career at Price Waterhouse. I did that for a couple years. And, you know, with 61s, you know, I'm very energetic and powerful. So can you imagine me like 40 years ago? I had five times this amount of energy in a little cubicle at Price Waterhouse. It was not a great fit for me. But, you know, accounting is really great as an entrepreneur for me to really understand my companies. But after that, what I did was I got into the banking world. I was a banker for 20 years. I started as a bank auditor. And by the time I was done, I was president of the bank. So I am passionate about business and entrepreneurship. You and I could sit and talk about ways of making money. And, you know, being a big fan of Shark Tank, when you're president of the bank on a loan committee, it's like Shark Tank. People come, they want to borrow money. You know, you go through a loan package to figure out whether you're going to give them money or not. And so so I relate to that. So I did that. And then back in 2003, I got in touch with my entrepreneurial side because I grew up, my dad actually owned a Dunkin' Donuts and a restaurant. So I grew up in an entrepreneurial household. And so at 43, I had the chance to buy a client's commercial printing company. It was about a 50,000 square foot facility, had almost 1,000 employees, and I did. And so I did that, and within a year, I bought six other companies. And so what I did, my strategy with that was that I bought companies that needed printing. So I had vertical integration, right? I had companies that needed printing and then they used my printing company, right? So now I have seven companies. I'm working 100 hours a week, working 7 days a week, having over 1,000 employees. And at that time, my best friend, who's 15 years younger than I am, was my personal trainer. And we became very good friends. He played collegiate tennis. I didn't play collegiate, but I played high school. And, you know, I think there's something about sports. You have like a competitive spirit with you, right? I know you play basketball. Yeah. So he had moved here from New York was married, and you know, he always would say, look, I don't want to be a 40-year-old trainer. He was 28 at the time. If you have friends who are personal trainers, you know, they're busy before, like, the workday, after. There's not as much time working in between. And so you're really capped in the amount of money you can make. So I said, Brian, what do you want to do when you grow up? He says, I want to be a real estate investor. So I said, look, okay. But again, I've got 7 companies. I'm working 100+ hours. I don't have a lot of time. So we started. But here's the thing about my personality. It's hard for me to do it a little. Like in life, I'm either in or I'm out. There's very little in between for me. So yeah. I started watching TV, and I saw the show Flip This House. They had started. They were in their second season. I reached out to a realtor. And so 8 months in to starting our new company, I was on our 4th flip. I end up on national television. Right. I mean, you know, and then I started as the investor, which I was. And then at the end of the season, the network came and said, you're the one. We want to be the lead character. So all of a sudden, my picture, my bio, my company, all on the A&E website. So when people say, well, how do people know you? We had 2 million viewers a show, my picture and bio, everything on, you know, the A&E website. And so when people think I've been in real estate forever, I haven't. I've been in it really 15 years. And, you know, what I'm most passionate about is connecting, helping people. As you know, I have a large database. I'm big about relationships. But, you know, that's not what I went to school for. I went for accounting. You know, I am still keeping my CPA license. And I love my banking because, again, as president of the bank, I learned a whole lot about many different types of businesses, services, manufacturers, distributors. And so I can quickly look at a business and know, excuse me, what the challenges are, you know, how much cash you need, you know, what's, you know, there's so many different things. But like somebody who's young like you and we become friends, I just love talking about business. Hey, you think about this idea? I banked somebody that did that. Let's just talk about what some of your challenges are. So, I mean, I just can talk about business all the time.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I really love that because it really shows how you can go to college for one thing and end up doing a totally another thing in the future, which is really great because I think a lot of people feel trapped in what they want to do.
So let me say this. One piece of advice my dad gave me that I love, and this is what he said, always be open to listen to people. Because you're right. If you had told me back then I'd end up on national television, I'd end up in real estate, I'd end up in direct sales, I would have said you're crazy. But a lot of those things I didn't even know about, right? I mean, when you're younger or even older, sometimes you don't know what you don't know. You don't even know what questions. And so the more experiences you have, you know, the more you're out in this thing called life, the more opportunities and more thoughts that you have in order to create something that really is just a lot better fit for who you are and what you want to do.
Right. And the world is always changing too. So I feel like you just always got to be ready for that change as well on a personal level.
Hey, listen, when I went to college, we didn't have computers, right? I mean, think about that. Can you imagine life without a computer? There were no cell phones. No, I mean, people are like, I'm like, okay, I'm not that age, but I mean, that's the truth. And so
Yeah. Here's
the thing. I'm committed to helping others. And to do that, I've had to adjust my knowledge set and learn, right? So as you probably know, I have over 40,000 people in my database. Well, how did I do that? Well, a lot of it's through social media. A lot of it's, you know, I value relationships. And I'm big about that. And I always say that understanding and nurturing, it's not just having, but nurturing relationships. And I say this both professionally and personally, will make you successful because nobody, whether your company or you're dating or you're involved with, wants to feel like you take them for granted. It's so important to show appreciation to people for what they do. And then they want to do more for you.
Right. And so I kind of want to jump back to the story for a little bit. So when you were president of a bank, how did you know whether or not to invest in a business? Like, what were some of the key components that you were looking for in a company to say whether or not, okay, yeah, I want to go with this company or no, I don't want to go with this company?
I love that question. So for me, the number one most important thing. Now, I'm going to give you a list because it's not like if you have one, you're going to get it. It's the people, right? The people and my ability to judge their integrity and who they are said a lot to me. Okay. Second is the experience. Have they done this before? You know? And then third is the industry. You know, like, for example, restaurants, nightclubs have such a high failure rate versus like certain people that have like get involved in franchises. Certain franchises have, you know, a much better success rate and lower failure rate. So, you know, character, people, so important. You know, a lot of times if I was on the fence, I'd want to meet the people. You know, I couldn't meet everybody because a lot of times I'm running through packages, but I always want to have done some type of check on the people because, again, you could take somebody in an industry that wasn't great, but somebody who wanted to work hard that showed they were willing to do what it takes versus somebody who maybe, you know, was in a good industry, but for one reason or another, the people took things for granted and you just knew that they were not going to succeed.
Yeah. And to be honest, like, I'm a firm believer in that as well, is that, like, you know, if someone really wants to put in the work and just doesn't really have that, like, never quits with it, then they're going to be successful in the long run. If you can find that person and then realize that's their characteristics, then I feel like that's a pretty good person to invest into.
And one step further is how much, like, if they didn't have a lot of experience, like, how willing were they willing to listen to you? So, you know, like, sometimes we talk about, well, how coachable is someone, whether it's in sports or anything like that. What you're really saying is, will they be open or do they feel like they know it all? See, none of us know everything about everything. And so I value people who are willing to learn from others. I learn from others. You know, I mean, hey, I'm 61 years old and every day I learn something new.
Right. And so after you were president of the bank, you then started your other companies, your seven companies you were working at the same time. And to me, that's insane because I'm in college, you know, trying to do a couple things at once. But now you're running seven companies at one time. Your time management skills have to be amazing to be able to do that. So what would you say would be the most challenging part of doing or running seven companies at one time?
So I would tell you this. In all the time that I was in business, the printing company was the most challenging. And here's the reason why. I had 1,000 employees. We ran three shifts. So if you're used to that, like, and I was used to part of that because my dad owned a Dunkin' Donuts that was open 24 hours. So people who work a night shift, which a lot of times like 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., have different objectives than people that work like a first shift from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. And so the other was culturally, right? I had a lot of the people that worked the night shift were, you know, people who had recently moved here, did not speak English. So a lot of my foremen on those shifts were, you know, Spanish speaking people. And, you know, those people might have made $10 an hour. And then I had people who made well over six figures a year. So it was such a diverse workforce that I had to use all of my people skills to really be able to relate and help people. But, you know, one of the things I feel fortunate about is, you know, I'm very organized. I think that's where, like, my personality of being a CPA is I'm very organized. I'm very detailed, even though I love big pictures, and I'm very process oriented. And so, you know, one of the things I even do today is I have, you know, a list that I rewrite every night to prioritize what my next day looks like.
Wow.
And the reason I do that is, you know, I'm up every morning. Do you know what time I'm up every morning? Do you know this story?
I do not, but
okay. <It's early. laughs> I am up every morning at 4 a.m.
Jeez.
And, you know, I don't even set an alarm. You know, growing up, my dad owned Dunkin' Donuts. It used to be a commercial. You know, you're too young for this. It used to be, gotta get up to make the donuts. That was like a famous Dunkin' Donuts commercial. And so I don't set an alarm. It's just my body's used to that. When I was in college, I always loved early morning classes. I'm just an early morning kind of guy. And so between 4 a.m. and 7 a.m., those 3 hours when nobody calls me, You know how much work I get done? It's equivalent to 8 hours of, you know, back and forth, the phone ringing and things like that. But the reason that I set my list and prioritize before I shut down is so that in the morning, I'm ready to go. Now, things come up and I have to change, you know, and my priorities, but at least I'm not wasting time trying to figure out what am I going to do that day.
Right, right. So you wake up at 4 a.m., so I'm kind of curious, what time do you go to bed?
All right, so this is the part that's going to surprise you. You want to take a guess what time you think I get up?
I'm going to go to bed. I'll say 10 p.m.
It's usually around midnight.
You get 4 hours of sleep a night?
And this is the energy I have. Yep.
Oh, my gosh. How do you not feel tired ever?
That's how my body is. Now, I will tell you this one story. So I went, when I owned those seven companies, I went 3 years without a day off. 3 years. And I went on a cruise. And they had to drag me on this cruise because I was doing stuff and we had an early flight. You know, I live in Atlanta. We had to fly to Florida and the cruise ships were leaving out of there. And like, it got to be 11 o'clock at night and I'm not done with my work. You know, I mean, I'm going to go on a week and I'm going to be on the water and I'm freaking out. And because I had said I was going to turn my phone off, like on the water, I was going to do that. And so, I mean, I did not get sleep that night. I mean, and even it got to be like we were getting ready to leave at 4 because we had about a 7:30 or 8 o'clock flight and they're dragging me because I'm like, I'm ready to cancel, honestly. I mean, so people said, absolutely not. So I did. I got on the ship. And the first thing that was crazy was when I turned my phone off. You ever have a thing like, I don't know if you hold your phone or you put it in your pocket and like all of a sudden you grab for wherever it is, it's not there and you freak out like you thought you like lost your phone.
Yeah.
So at first I'm like, oh my God. And I realized it was like in my room turned off, but I fell asleep and I slept for like 14 hours. You know what, for the first time in many years, I didn't even realize how tired I was. And I think my body was so used to being tired that it wasn't used to, like, you know, and like all of a sudden it was just like I woke up and it was like almost like noon or like 1 p.m. and I was like freaking out. But at the end of the day, you know, 4 hours is enough for me. Some people think I'm lucky. Some people think I'm crazy. And I think they're both right, really, Will. But, you know, that's all I need.
Yeah. And so, like you said on the cruise, like you slept for 14 hours that one day. And it just showed, like, how tired you actually were. So do you think it's actually healthy to sleep that 4 hours a day, even though, like, it's kind of necessary for you to get all of that work done?
Here's the thing. I let my body tell me what it needs. I don't set up an alarm. So I don't set up and say, I've got to start it. It's just my body's up and it's ready to go. True. So, and listen, if I'm tired, you know, every once in a while, although it's been a little while, I would take a nap, you know, in the afternoon for a half an hour, 45 minutes. But here's the thing, I take good care of myself, right? You know, I eat well. I exercise. You know, the thing that I like the best is, you know, I go, you know, once a month for massage. You know, I mean, massage is like one of the few times, but let me back up. So like I'll be laying in bed and my mind is always working, right? I'm always thinking about things, you know, whether it's work, whether it's something new, you know, fill in the blank. And like when I go for a massage, not only does it feel good in my back, I have a degenerated disc. I've had that for many years. And so not only does it feel good, but it's one of the few times that my mind, like I can shut it off. And like I'm not sleeping. I'm almost like in this state where it's in between sleeping and like paying attention. So like mentally, it maybe gets me in my zen mood and it feels good. And like I said, with my, you know, my disc that I have in my back, it just is like the best thing.
Okay. Makes sense. So jumping back into your story again, you own seven paper companies, seven printing companies, and then you switch out of them to start a real estate company with your friend. And so I'm just kind of curious, like you're obviously doing so well, you're owning seven companies, you're making all the money you need to, why would you switch out of that into something brand new?
Love that question. So I have a personal mission statement. So let me share my personal mission statement. Every day, I will positively affect as many people as possible. I'm going to say that one more time. Every day, I will positively affect as many people as possible. So actually, when I started the company, you know, and I'm working part-time on there, but, you know, part-time became full-time after being on national television. I sold my companies. Was Brian, who was my trainer and best friend. He was like the little brother I never had, and I loved him. And I didn't know that he would have an opportunity to have be part of his business. And the truth is, I started that company because I wanted something for him.
Wow. That's powerful.
Yeah.
Your whole life up and your successful businesses just to help someone else out. That's amazing.
Because here's the thing. I had enough money to live. You know, and even today, you know, I hate when I say this, but it's the truth. I don't have to work. So if I do something, it's because I want to, not because I have to, right? And so it's like, you know, I've taken you under my wing, right?
For sure.
Why have I done that? You know, take a guess why I've done that?
You love helping people. Your mission statement.
I do. And here's the thing. Time will tell if your mission statement is truly your mission statement. See, when people talk about commitment, commitment's easy when it's easy. Commitment comes into view when your life, like life is a roller coaster. There are times that are better than others. Your commitment will be challenged when you hit a low or a setback. That's going to tell you about what is your character? Who are you? What do you want? And so I look for that. And so, you know, I always say this. At 61, I don't know how many years I'm going to be on this, you know, universe. It could be a day. It could be a year. It could be 10 years. It could be 30 years, 40 years. But here's what I know. Every day, I have an opportunity to help others. And whenever my day is for me to leave this world, my hope is, you know, when people say, well, like, what do you want your funeral to look like? I want a room of the people that I've helped and everybody to just share something I've done for them, taught them, or, you know, something that I've said that has helped them in one way or the other. So that's what I do, what I do. I don't have to, but it's what really pushes me and it's what I get the most gratification out of.
That's amazing. You know, it's just like that old prophecy, like you give what you get back. So, I mean, that's just really, truly amazing to see. And it's obviously has really paid out for you in the long run. I think that's one of the main reasons why, just because you put other people in front of yourself and you want to help other people first. So.
And let me just say this. I always say this when I teach people and coach people. If you decide to help someone, it's not help if you expect something in return. See, if I help you, I don't expect anything from you. But the worst is if I expect something from you and I don't tell you. See, if you're going to do something for someone and you're expecting something in return, you need to say that so that the person is clear. But again, to me, that's not giving. But here's what I found. The more I help others, the universe has been so good to me. And, you know, I have just I live my life in gratitude. You know, one thing you didn't ask me, but is how I start my day. And, you know, 4 o'clock, I put the coffee on, it's ready to go. And I have a gratitude journal. And I start my day by putting at least 10 things I'm grateful for, because what you focus on expands. And I want my day to start in gratitude. And I end the day by writing in my gratitude. So I get up, I'm grateful. I go to bed, I'm grateful.
It's amazing. Yeah. And a lot of other people I've had on my podcast to do that as well as gratitude journals. I think it's a really great practice for people to start doing, just like you said, like it gets your mind frame in the right way to start out your day. So
because we all have gratitude. And let me just say this. What's so interesting is, you know, I have truly the honor of mentoring a lot of younger people. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when I tell them about that, they're asking me, but Peter, I don't have everything I want, or I'm not where I thought I would be. That's what I get a lot. I thought at age X, I'd be in so-and-so. So I'm like, okay, so let's just talk about what gratitude is. Gratitude is based on what you have today. It's not that you say you have everything. You know, if you've got food in your belly and you have a roof over your head and you have clean water, Do you know how many people in the world would just kill for that? You have billions of people. So, you know, so be grateful for that. Now, then come up with a blueprint of what you still want. I, you know, graduate isn't that you have everything. It's then you have the plan of where you're going to go. And so, you know, if you can't be grateful for what you have, then, you know, you are not going to have a satisfying life. And I always say this too. None of us ever get to the finish line. So every day you try to move forward, but you have to enjoy the process. See, that's the key. If you don't enjoy the process, then you don't enjoy the treasures and the beauties of every day.
Wow. Yeah. I 100% agree. And, you know, Jordan said, like, most of us are doing better than 99% of the world. Like you said, if we have water and food every day, then, you know, that's pretty good. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I just have one more question for you before we run out of time here. So you talked about how your mission statement was just generally helping other people as well. And I think a lot of people in today's world, their mission statement kind of revolves around money, and that's their main motivation. So do you think it's wrong to be motivated by money and just to do things in order to get money?
So here's what I would say to someone. That's not their mission statement. So if somebody says they believe that it's money, then I'm like, okay, let's tear that apart. What are you going to do with the money? Okay. I keep peeling the onion back to get to, okay, you say, let's say you want to make $100,000. Great. What are you going to do with $100,000? Well, I'm going to pay off my debt. Okay, great. Now you pay off the debt. What are you going to do? So going back to, and what I find, if you really do that, Will, that most people, when you're peeling back the onion, they're doing something for either their family, their loved ones, or a lot of times it really revolves around or a charity or something that they're passionate about. So money is not really, they might think it is, but once they drill down, it's something that's bigger. And I like drilling it down because there are times in my life that I've had a lot of money. There are times in my life I have not had a lot of money. And so my personal goal is not how much money I have in the bank. And a lot of times when I spend time with people, they're like, well, why do you spend time with me? I haven't achieved any of this. You know, they're giving me all this stuff. And I said, look, I judge people, but not how much money they have in the bank. I judge people, by what are they doing to, you know, and how they treat people to positively affecting the lives of others. That tells me really a lot about, you know, who they are. And again, it's easier when you have money to treat people better. But you know what? You're going to hit bumps in the road. The better question is, how are you going to treat people when you don't?
Right.
So, and like that's what I would tell you.
Yeah. And like you said, that'll reveal their true mission statement if they actually care about other people, like you said earlier.
So peel that onion back. It's never, they think it's about the money. They just haven't really done an exercise to go, what will that money do? And then keep going back and, you know, going a little bit further and further to something that is really that, okay, that's the core. And you know why that's important? Because when things get tough, when you realize, okay, I'm here to help my parents, I'm here to help, you know, a charity, a kids or whatever it is. When life happens and it's tough, you will stick it out because you realize that core is bigger than you.
Wow. That is super powerful. And, you said a lot of really great things today that I hope a lot of people can kind of take in and consider and, you know, hopefully change their lives with it. So if people want to reach out to you, how can they find you?
All right. So I'm on Facebook, right? You got Peter. My last name's Pasternak there. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. And, you know, my phone number, I give to anybody. My phone number is 404-275-8087. Again, 404-275-8087. And my question to you out there today is, what are you going to do today that will positively affect the lives of others?
Awesome. All right, guys, there you have it. Peter Pasternak, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.